This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast that teaches you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in Long Beach, California, joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm good, Michael. How are you?
I don't hear a lot of clock going on behind you, which is typically the case when you're at Boulder Pickleball.
We've got a train going by. I don't know if you can hear that.
But, cannot. As we often do, we get our show topics from not only you guys, but real world experiences. And in this case, Scott, I was at a very rec level, sort of 3-5, 3-0, maybe 3-5 group last night, a little local group. And while I realize this is 4.0 to Pro, I do see a lot of these tendencies bleed into the early fours, if you will. And some people really, really struggle how to play against bangers. And I thought, well, that would be a very cool idea for a show topic. So that's what we're doing today. We're talking about how to play against bangers, which we've actually covered many of these topics before on separate shows, which we will refer to during the course of this episode. There are some things we'd love for you to think about as you're playing people that really rip the ball, some with accuracy and some with limited accuracy. So, Scott, overview on playing against bangers in pickleball, just in general, and then let's get into some specific stuff people can do to counter said bangers.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you witness this at the lower levels, but I witness it at 4.0 to Pro all the time. I think it's one of the biggest things we can do to move up a level. If you're watching play at this level, there's plenty of pace in the ball. Big difference between the 4.25 and the 6.25 is, as you mentioned, the accuracy and probably location on the court when that ball is banged in the direction. The 4.25 might not be in the optimal place on the court, whereas the pro chooses a better time and place.
You know, that 6.25, those balls are more likely going to go in, even if it's a fifth or seventh shot. Although I would say it's very rare at that level to see a drive as a fifth or a seventh or a ninth shot. It's very rare.
Hence the location on the court. I mean, we talk from a priority standpoint or a hierarchy of focuses that court positioning is huge, shot selection right on up there. And then a little bit lower down from that is shot execution. And the pros have all of them.
Right.
And the lower levels, you know, might be 2 out of 3, 1 out of 3.
One thing we talked about last week for people that are sort of transitioning to pickleball from tennis is that there's a transition zone game, a short game, if you will, like in golf, that those are the things that the tennis players really need to learn because they already have footwork, they already have split step, they already have ground strokes. So very often they tend to lean on those ground strokes, even in doubles, where you'll get a nice third shot drive, but then if they're mid transition zone, they'll try to rip it again because that's what they know. They don't have the other shot in their arsenal just yet. So I do see this a little bit with tennis players. So we're going to get into some of the nuance of what we talked about on episode 17, which is like letting out balls go out. But Scott, let's assume you've got a beautiful third shot drive and it's heading right for your torso. You have to hit that ball. Let's talk about what to do in that instance. So why don't you start us off with the very first thing to think about in that case?
Well, we're getting ready for a fourth shot, which, not surprisingly, we've done a show, that's show 27, so take a listen back to that one. And very early on in that show, and pretty much every show, we talk about the importance of the split step, which leads to our stable base, the ability to assess the quality of our opponent's shot and get ourselves ready. So, you know, if we're on the move in as the returner, we want to hustle in. We have the time when the ball leaves our paddle until it reaches their paddle to adjust our court position. Then we need that split second, split step, and then we can move left, right, forward, or back accordingly. But if you're the returner's partner, don't forget you need to split step as well, because if that ball comes rifling in your direction, you're going to need a stable base and you're not going to want to be sleeping either.
So very first things first, that ball is about to get smacked by your banger opponent. You've got to stabilize, period. Like, you've got to just get ready, batten down the hatches, and get ready for that next ball. What I saw a ton yesterday, Scott, was they may have even done the split step okay and stabilized somewhat, but very often they weren't. They were still on the move coming up into the net. But instead of just stabilizing and being still with their torso, meaning they've got their paddle out in front of them, it is aimed back towards their opponents. Well, they're trying to swing at this ball. This ball is coming at them with a ton of pace, and they're trying to swing back at the ball instead of just saying, there's not a lot of offense I can do with this. And this is something that I think is really interesting. When that ball is being struck by your opponent and they're driving in, you're on defense. You're not on offense at that moment. You want to take a defensive position with this because there's not a lot of offense you can do with a ball that's traveling at whatever, 80 miles an hour at your torso, unless you're just this master volleyer, which you could be. And certainly by the end of that game or match, you will be, because they're going to sit and bang at you the whole time. So instead of trying to swing back at that ball, I like to really stiffen my arm. And very often I'll try to keep two hands on the paddle if the thing is coming at me, you know, in my torso, because I don't want that wrist to buckle as the thing hits my paddle. And thankfully, we have these modern paddles that have all kinds of pop and stability built into them. This would be an example of where you might add a little weight in the throat of the paddle to give yourself even a little more stability in some of these cases. The general idea is, don't try to swing at this ball. This is a ball that needs to be blocked back.
I agree with you in 99% of the cases. I want to give a little shout out to one of my NPL rivals, Rich Lively from the Boca Raton Picklers, who is one of very few people who I've seen take my, you know, what I like to consider to be pretty hot third shot drive. Yeah. And get it back at me twice as fast. Mm. And I've also seen it go off of his edge guard a couple of times.
Sure.
So it's
a, is it
it's
like
a
pitcher
run
where you've got to start swinging before the ball even comes off your paddle, or what?
He's one of the only guys I know that can really take a rip at a fourth shot, you know, with a third shot coming at him pretty hot. But that's the exception, not our suggestion. Everything that you mentioned, I totally agree with. I like to say that if the pace is already on the ball, now I've probably been saying this for 40 years, this goes back to a lot of my tennis instruction, the more pace that's already on the ball, the less we need to do. I'd also suggest, as you've kind of already intimated, is this is probably a backhand. As we get our spidey sense tells us that, you know, the ball is going to be hit hot at us, our backhand covers more of our body. It's a better shield than our forehands. And so I'm inclined to get a backhand ready and punch, block that ball back. Now, the second part that comes with that is, I'm not just going to surrender the high ground at this point. If I can punch that ball back to their feet, wherever their feet are, maybe it's in the midcourt, maybe they haven't come in all that far. If I can punch that ball back to them, you know, my partner and I can maintain our offensive positioning, and that drive didn't gain them any. So that's my goal. Stable base, block the ball back, use the pace that's already on the ball, and keep them back.
So I love doing these because I always learn something new when I do these shows, because you have a lot of little inside baseball stuff that you share with us, which is so cool. You've got something here that says double secret tip, stack strategically and move your weaker player cross court from their big hitter.
This could be mixed doubles. It could be gender doubles. It's something that I learned the hard way, playing mixed doubles with Mattias Johansson on the other side, who has one of the more potent drives.
I have played against him. and he does.
So, you know, in standard mixed doubles with right-handed players, I was on the left. My female partner was on the right, directly across from Matthias. We were up a game and 8-2 in the second game. They called a timeout and came out with a new game plan, hit the ball as hard as possible at my partner. And we lost that second game. It took us quite some time to make our own adjustment, which was to stack strategically, which in this case meant put me in front of Matthias, my mixed partner on the left, a little bit further away from Matthias to give her a little bit more time to deal with his pace and also present an angle quandary for Matthias, that if she let it go, that the court was less favorable on the diagonal. He couldn't keep it in play as much.
You're making him go inside out, basically, with that drive.
Yeah, inside out, and he didn't have the full length of the court to hit into. It was effective. I would love to finish this lovely story by saying we came back and won the match, but I'm just going to end the story right there. But the tip remains that if you have one player on your team who doesn't handle the pace as well as the other, see if you can't get that player a little further away from whichever opponent is the bigger hitter on the other side. And that's stacking strategically, not necessarily customarily stacking.
I love it. That's a really great tip. One thing that happens very early on with me, yesterday this happened a lot. I have certainly, since our show number 17, taken our, I believe it was Abe Lincoln that said this first, his tip about letting pickleballs go out, which is above the titties, no hitties.
And Abe was about 6'6", wasn't he?
Abe was 6'6". So that's a very high ball. I did it so many times yesterday, and there were so many ole that I just, like, as they were winding up, I just sort of backed out and stood sideways and let it go out. But a few of them were only like 4 inches out. My partner kept going, man, how do you know? I go, they're doing a full backswing and they're 3/4 of the way through the transition zone. There's no way that ball's going in unless they just hit a duck. And if that's the case, you usually have enough time to nail it. So 100% go back and listen to that episode number 17 if you guys haven't done it already. We're going to talk a little bit about how to let out balls go out, because that is one of the most effective ways to beat bangers. I'm typically willing to sacrifice a couple of points at the beginning of the game and just let the balls, I want to see what this guy's drive looks like. And so if he rips it at me, I'll just step aside without trying to block it and just see if it's anywhere near the inside of the court. Meaning, let me make him make the adjustment to either slow the pace down or add a little more topspin to keep that ball in play. If they can't show that they can do that, then I'm not even going to give them the pleasure of me blocking the ball back to give them another shot. I'm just going to let it go out and move on to the next point.
So it is best if you can have a little advanced knowledge of your opponents, know what they like to do, know their tendencies, and maybe their tells. And from the subject of tells, it does go towards the punch list that we shared with you in show 17, but there's a lot of things that they do before they hit the ball that should give you a pretty strong indication that their shot is going out. And that's where, you know, Michael, you've learned the ole move, which is generally stepping out of the way before they hit the ball. And that can be rather effective. And just a couple of highlights from that punch list that you've already begun to reference is the size of their backswing. Now, if they're behind the baseline, they can take as much a backswing as they want. Gravity is going to help them out. But the closer they get to the net, if that backswing is still appropriate for the backcourt, let's combine that with the height of the ball off the ground. If it's rather low and they take a big backswing, as I like to say, they lack the proper equipment on this tiny court to hit the ball at their desired pace without enough spin to keep it in play. That's a tell right there. Right. And that's a great time to step out of the way before they hit the shot.
I like it if they hit a flat ball as well. Like if they're at the baseline hitting flat balls versus balls that have a lot of topspin on them, it's going to be very difficult for them to keep that ball in the court the closer they go. I played against a dude yesterday that came from squash, and he had a very like choppy slice that he put on the ball, and the balls would be very flat and the path of the ball wouldn't dip that much. If you've ever played against squash people in racquetball or squash or whatever, it's a very distinctive swing that they have. It's a very different swing than other racket sports. Maybe more like badminton, I'm not sure. But it was hard to get the ball to dip in the court. So you could rely on your eyeballs. If you play against somebody who is hitting a very flat ball in general, you can go, all right, I'm going to give them a teeny window of this one might stay in the court. And that's if they're hovering around the baseline. Otherwise, you probably have a pretty good shot of letting that thing go out.
And I think that's fodder for a future show, Mike, is, you know, at Forward to Pro, whether we come from a tennis background or not, we should be able to learn a lot more about the technique, the swing path, the likely spin that comes off our opponent's paddle before they make contact. You know, at the pro level, we know what the backswing looks like that produces topspin. We know what the backswing looks like that produces slice and what the likely trajectory of those shots is going to look like. And yes, we need to process that into our decision making as to whether to let that ball fly or to play it.
Right. And then other things that we've talked about in the past, wind, you know, if you've got the wind at your back and you're playing against bangers, which means they're facing the wind, they've got a better chance of getting that ball to stay in the court. So you've got to rely on your instincts on that a little bit. I'm a proponent of letting a couple of the first balls kind of land where they go. So I have some kind of idea of where they're supposed to go. But yeah, you know, the general rule is the closer to the net, the less that backswing better be, because otherwise that thing's flying out. So the other thing, Scott, and I'm just, this is a flyer. Like, I don't really know if this is a good strategy or not, but things I've thought in the past, considering maybe your teammate's getting really rocked by this banger, maybe their shots are more accurate than you'd hoped, maybe the ball's staying in the court more than you want, and they're really hitting effective shots. I've always thought, well, maybe the best move is to get them to, like, force them to play the short game by getting them to the kitchen, because if they want to still bang from that 7-foot kitchen line, it's probably going into the net. You know, they try to speed up all the time. I don't know, maybe that's a terrible tactic, but I'm curious about your thought on it.
In most cases, I would say yes, terrible tactic. earlier we mentioned, let's get our stable base, block this ball back to their feet, wherever the heck their feet are, probably in the midcourt or close to the baseline, and neutralize their drive, neutralize their tendency to select power over finesse. However, there are a few circumstances where I've shared with my partner, we've got to figure out a way to make this exchange more favorable for us. We would prefer softer, longer rallies. They seem to love shorter, harder rallies. And to your point, that may be one of those situations where instead of blocking it back to their feet and letting them drive again, that we take a little something off it. And, you know, on the heels of our previous conversation, if the closer they get to the net, the less effective the giant backswing is going to be. Let's see if we can't get a ball to bounce 8 inches off the ground, a little bit beyond the kitchen line. And really, the only thing they should do is dink or drop at that point. If they want to take a big rip at it, I'd be Olaying that one all day.
Right.
So yeah, I guess there are circumstances. You're down 8-2 and they're just driving everything. And that might be one of those desperation moves, is let's hit a softer ball and get them on up for a 4-person ritual kitchen exchange.
I've actually done that in singles before, believe it or not. I had a guy that was just painting the alleys on me, and there was nothing I could do. His ground strokes were so good, and I had not figured out how to come in on the return of serve and do anything but just get past. He was just super accurate, and I said, man, I've got to somehow get him into the short game where he wasn't very good. So I started hitting these super short returns of serve, like almost like a served return drop, and forcing a cat and mouse. And I started winning points that way. It was very interesting. Only one guy though. I wouldn't recommend this for everybody, but that guy was
effectively, you've effectively queued up our future singles show.
Seriously, we got to do that show. 100%, we have to do a single show. Yes. Before we ring off, as my mom used to say, on our notes here, you have something called the SF swagger move. And we are all on the edge of our seats wanting to know what that move actually is. I have no idea what it is. Please.
I don't think it's that great, but I don't consider myself a player who carries a lot of swagger on the court, but something stuck with me from probably age 12 on the tennis court. And I do consider myself rather good at letting out balls go out. So I have kind of picked up this tendency to, when I let the ball fly, I don't turn my head. I look right at my opponent.
Right.
And we all know it's going out. And sometimes I do it on a ball that's 8 inches out and I know it's out.
Yeah.
And they look at me funny. And, you know, I think takeaway there is I know when you're going to hit the ball out.
Right. Wait, do you hold your finger up like it's out while you're looking at them?
Either I
that would be the ultimate stare down. That would be so great.
It is highly implied that I know the ball is going out. I'll either put my finger up, I'll say out, let my partner, you know, say it. But the takeaway is, I think, a little psychological advantage that I have a very good measure on the length of the court when it comes to your tendencies to hit a ball long.
I love the idea too of to take it to the next level by, you know, being in your ready position and they rip the ball and you literally don't move a muscle and it just rips by your shoulder and you just stay dead still the whole time. I love that idea as well. That sounds fun.
Yeah, I kind of do something like that.
Great. All right, folks, you now know how to play against bangers. You will neutralize them the next time you're on the court. Thank you, as always, for listening to 4.0 to Pro. We enjoy you. We appreciate you. We appreciate your ratings and reviews and all those things. And go out on the court and have some fun. Go play some pickleball. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now, get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.